Welcome to the Beyond the Shoe Box Score Podcast, where you hear from current and former Sacred Heart student athletes and coaches. Here's your host, Dan Gardella.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Beyond the Shoe Box Score Podcast. Dan Gardella here with you for episode number 8 of the podcast series with another great guest. Ed Swanson, the former head coach of the Sacred Heart women's basketball team, joins me to talk about his time at Sacred Heart and what didn't he do when he was with the program. 23 seasons at the helm, he helped them make the jump from Division II to Division I competition, and then from there, the success flowed. 3 Northeast Conference tournament titles, 3 NCAA tournament appearances, 406 wins, the most at Sacred Heart in Sacred Heart history, and now is currently the head coach at William & Mary, and he's doing a great job there. After some growing pains in the beginning, he's continuing to turn them into an NCAA tournament team, just like he did with Sacred Heart. So it's good to talk to him and hear how he was able to take Sacred Heart from a Division II team to a program that has made the Northeast Conference tournament every single season they've been in the conference. That's unheard of. It's just unheard of. You will never see that duplicated or replicated, that kind of success. And when he was the head coach, and this is what I talked about a little with him in the interview, when they made the move to the Northeast Conference, 8 teams make the playoffs, and then they go from there. 1 plays 8, 2 plays 7, 3 plays 6, 4 plays 5. He never finished lower than 3rd. He finished in a tie for 3rd one season or a couple seasons, but he never finished lower than 3rd, which is unbelievable. Just something that is never going to be replicated. But what Jessica Minetti is doing is she's picking up right where Swanson left with the success of the program and everything like that. So that interview is coming up. Nothing much to report on college sports. Sacred Heart sports are still about 2-3 weeks out. Men's hockey is coming back. They'll be back the weekend of November 13th and 14th. Women's hockey will probably be waiting until 2021 until they come back. Men's basketball, men's and women's basketball is a month away. I literally, as I'm recording this, October 25th, the day before this will come out, we are exactly a month away from the return of college basketball. Sacred Heart, the men's team at least, will begin their season against Rutgers right on November 25th in Piscataway. Just counting it down, praying that we can get to November 25th and have little to no hiccups, no problems, no COVID cases or surges. But right now, I'm holding my breath, and I know a lot of people are holding their breath that we can get to a college basketball season. But nothing more to report. Right now, we're just, like I said, crossing off each day on our calendar and getting closer and closer to the return of college sports in Fairfield. Let's move on to our guests. As I said, the aforementioned Ed Swanson joined me, talked about a lot of great things from his early coaching career to his coaching style to just everything that he did at Sacred Heart, and then ultimately his decision to leave Sacred Heart and what went into that and how he took Sacred Heart, turned them into the contender in the Northeast Conference year in and year out, and he's looking to do the same thing with William & Mary now. Once again, a great interview. Great guy to talk to. I had a lot of fun with this one. So without further ado, my interview with the legendary Ed Swanson. Joining me on the podcast this is a real treat for me. He is the all-time winningest coach in Sacred Heart women's basketball history. He is currently the head coach at William & Mary. He's going into his 8th season at the helm there, but not after a lot of success in Fairfield. It's Ed Swanson. Coach, thanks so much for taking the time to join me. Let's start all the way back in the beginning. You come to Sacred Heart in 1990, when the school is not even Division I yet. How was your mentality when you come into Sacred Heart and you're starting to build up the program?
Yeah, I think it, you know, it's funny. I was a junior in high school and I knew I wanted to be a basketball coach. And, you know, right after graduating from college, I was fortunate enough to volunteer and get a job with Coach Bike, who's been a great mentor to me over the years. And I started off on the men's staff, and I was there for, I think, 2 years. It's been so long now, 2 years. And then Going into my third year, Coach Bike talked me into taking the women's basketball program. I always thought I'd be a men's basketball coach, but Coach Bike talked me into being the women's basketball coach back in 1990. And I really, like I said, basketball was basketball to me. I enjoyed the student athletes and the women that I was working with back there in 1990. And I think I was only like 2 or 3 years older than them at the time. Sacred Heart was a very special place then, back in 1990, and it's a very special place and holds a very special place in my heart. So anytime I get a chance to talk about Sacred Heart and the women's basketball program there, I love to do it.
So you come in, and like I said, program wasn't Division I yet, and you know, your first couple years at the helm were, you know, nothing out of, you know, nothing successful or crazy successful. You really have one winning season in your first 5 seasons at Sacred Heart. How much of that time did you take to learn more about yourself as a coach?
Great question. You know, I was young. I'm smart enough where I know that I don't know everything. So I spent a lot of time talking to a lot of different coaches. Coach Bike, like I mentioned, was a great mentor to me. Nick Giaquinto, the former baseball coach. I thought that's really where I developed my style as a coach. I don't know if you know much about me, but I'm high energy, high intensity. And those are the type of players that I like to recruit. And I think, you know, the first 5 years there, it was kind of just trying to get a feel. Now, back then, Division II basketball was really, really good. Northeast 10 and the NECC, the New England Collegiate Conference, were two very good women's basketball conferences. So we really had our work cut out for us, and we built slowly. But once we started getting the right person, the right student athlete there at Sacred Heart, that's when we really started to flourish.
Yeah, it's funny. A couple weeks ago, I had Callan Taylor, one of the great Sacred Heart women's basketball players, on the podcast as well. And she described your coaching style as upfront and honest. Now, how, you know, is that true? And how did you use that style to bring in that right group of athletes when you were starting to build up Sacred Heart?
Yeah. Well, like I said, back in the beginning, it was important that we get the right fit, a kid that, you know, maybe had a chip on our shoulder. We knew, back in 1999, when we were making the move to Division One, I knew that I had to recruit a better basketball player, but a kid that wanted to be part of something special, a kid that wanted to build all those championships that we won. And those great years that we had were because of those players back in the, you know, we were able to get a Callan Taylor because we were able to get a Brooke Kelly, you know, back in 1999. My style has always been that way. And my recruiting style has been that way. And I was able and fortunate enough to recruit kids to the university that believed in me. As much as I believed in them, they believed in me that I can make them the best possible player they can be. And you mentioned a great one right there with Callan Taylor, that she was, we can have this whole podcast on just stories about Callan Taylor and motivating her to be the type of player that she was. But, it was all about just getting that right fit of kid. And once you get able to get that right fit of kid in terms of academically, socially, and basketball, then you become a better coach.
So you're in Division II basketball up until the 1999-2000 season is when you make the move to Division I. You join the Northeast Conference. Walk us through the transition and the things that went on behind the scenes that it took to bring Sacred Heart up into Division I competition and joining the Northeast Conference.
Right. You know, when you talk about at any level, when you talk about a great basketball program or football program, baseball, it's more than just the players and the coaches. It's an administration. It's a fan base. It's, you know, it starts with that. It starts with leadership, and then it kind of trickles down. So, like, I'll go back. I keep mentioning Coach Bike. Don Cook was our athletic director at the time when we made the move from 2 to 1. We recruited, like I said, a special type of kid that really believed in that. Hey, we're going from 2 to 1. This is not going to be easy. You can go to Monmouth, you can go to Quinnipiac, you can go to other schools. Might be a little bit easier for you, but this is going to be a hard transition. So those are the blue collar kids, what we're looking for. And you know, I thought we had a chance to be very, very competitive right off the bat, and we were. Our first year, we were I believe we were 14-14, I believe.
Yep.
And if I'm not correct. And, you know, and that was done with a bunch of freshmen as well. Like Brooke Rutnick, Ashley Dermer, Brooke Kelly. I know I mentioned her before. Those were kind of the cornerstone kids that really helped us start competitive. And then people started taking notice that, hey, you can do something special at Sacred Heart. And then we started each year, started adding the different pieces until we really exploded, I think, in 2006.
What was the biggest adjustment for you as a coach, or even for the program itself, when you made that transition, whether it was the play, the coaches, and the kind of the chess match that you had to go through? What stood out the most to you?
I think it was more of a mental thing, seriously, because, you know, we were a Division II school. So, I took great – I loved watching Merrimack College this year. You know, they went from Division II to Division I. And that was kind of how we were a little bit. Hey, we're good basketball players. But it was getting over that hump that we were as good as – good, even though we had the label as Division II the prior year, I thought we had some players that should have been recruited Division I. But I thought once we got over that mental thing that, hey, we're as good as anybody, I thought that was our biggest adjustment. I knew that we had the talent to be good. And tell you the truth, I was a little disappointed that we were 14-14. I thought we could have been better. But I think that was a hurdle that we had to jump over first, is that mental thing of being labeled as Division II to Division I. So the play wasn't any different. The coaching wasn't any different. Facilities wasn't any different. It was really, I think, that mental hump that we had to get over.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, you're not happy with 14-14, but you go 11-7 that first year, which finished tied for third. And then after that, you don't finish any lower than third for the rest of your career at Sacred Heart. Third, second, third, a couple regular season titles. How were you able to, year in and year out, manage the expectations that come? Because year one, you probably come in, there's not a whole lot of expectations. Right. Now, as you continue to finish near the top of the conference, more eyes are starting to go on you, and with that comes pressure. How were you able to manage that?
Yeah, you know, I didn't feel the pressure as much, but I thought the kids, you know, like I said, we had kids in those early days that just had a chip on their shoulder. And, you know, we never talked about, we always had high expectations for our program. And Dan, every year we talked about, what do we have to do to win to compete for a championship? And we went about our work on a day-to-day basis, whether it was training during the summer, the postseason, the preseason. We trained like champions year round. And, you know, and we didn't finish at the mountaintop every year. But I've always taken great pride that, and, you know, it's funny too, you know, we were finished third, but a couple of years we were picked preseason polls to finish fourth and fifth. And I remember going into those practices those years and saying, look, they picked us for fifth. We've never finished below third, but they picked us for fifth. So I think, you know, expectations are a good thing. And that's what I always said when I was at Sacred Heart, that, you know, when people think you're good, I think that really brings out the confidence in you. And, you know, so, I thought the biggest pressure was our 09 team, where, you know, we were undefeated in league play. That was pressure, I think, because you almost felt like you should have lost a game heading into the tournament. But no, the expectations were something that we welcomed at Sacred Heart.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm looking at your record year every year at Sacred Heart, and you know, your 06 team that cracked through to the NCAA tournament for the first time goes 26-5, 16-2. The 09 team that you alluded to, 25-8, 18-0 in conference play. I know I was looking at the results from that year, and I think there were a couple 1- and 2-point games. I if you can remember back to that season, were you hoping that you would lose a game in the regular season, so when you came into the conference tournament, there wasn't as much pressure to finish the perfect season?
I'd be lying if I told you I was hoping that we lost a game. No, I just, you know, I just think as and Dan, if you look back at that year, we started off 0-5. I mean, we played at Marquette, at Kansas. We lost a real Stephanie Guillen hit a 3-pointer at the buzzer. Fairfield beat us. We lost a 1-point game to Lehigh, and then we went on a stretch that was just incredible. Like I said, Callan Taylor was a freshman on that team. Elisa Apo was player of the year. Caitlin Swinski. If Elisa Apo didn't win player of the year, we had some really, really good, tough, hardcore basketball players. And You know, towards the end of the year that year, we with Stephanie Ryan, who was a big part of our program, she had a bad, I believe it was her foot, and we didn't know whether it was a stress fracture. So I sat her out like the last five games of the year to kind of get her ready for the conference tournament. But no, I didn't, you know, if you got a chance to be perfect in conference, you want to, you know, leave a legacy and be perfect. But that team was just really special. But I remember vividly after we beat St. Francis of Pennsylvania in the championship in the locker room, it wasn't something of like, you know, celebration and jumping down. It was like, whew, you know what I mean? It's over with. You know what I mean? We did it. So it was more of a relief that we won that championship than the celebration part of it.
Yeah, and so those are your first two NCAA tournament teams. Then you go once again, I believe it was 2012 was the next year that you cracked through. You made it back to the NCAA tournament. So that's three NCAA tournaments in about 6 or 7 years. And now at this point, Sacred Heart is becoming not only a front runner in the Northeast Conference, but they're slowly becoming one of the better mid-major teams in all of women's college basketball. How did that change at all in terms of the recruitment and the recognition and the eyes on the program at all?
I think so. I thought we were able to, you know, recruit at a different level, you know, during that time. I thought that, you know, all three, you know, championship teams were different and built differently and had different personalities. But it certainly, you know, I mean, people were taking notice of Sacred Heart, not just because of its women's basketball program, but because of the growth of the university, not only academically, but its physical presence and, you know, a leading Catholic institution. People were taking notice of us, you know, during that time. And I think just having a good women's basketball program for me, you know, enabled us to recruit in a different region. I mean, if you look at our 2012 team, our starting point guard was from California. Our starting center was from Arizona. Our sixth person was from Seattle, Washington. So, you know, we had, you know, we were able to recruit outside of the region a little bit because of our great reputation academically, the growth of us, the physical plant of the campus, and then obviously the basketball program.
So I'm going to ask you, and this you could take as much time as you need to answer it. Money on the line. Which team wins out of the three? The 06 team, the 2012 team, or the 2009 team?
Now, here's what I've always told everybody, all right? The 2009 team was by far the most talented, all right, from top to bottom, 6'5" in the middle. Point guard Elisa Apo, who can do, she's player of the year. Maggie Cosgrove can shoot it. Callan Taylor was a freshman on that team. Was on, you know, she was rookie of the year. No, she wasn't rookie of the year, but she should have won rookie of the year. The 2012 team was a team that really I appreciated because they improved, you know, from 1 year to the next year, and then from game to game they improved. The 06 team was probably, in my 30 years as a head coach, the toughest team that I've ever coached. Like, from Carrie Burke at the point guard spot to Amanda Pape, who at this time in my 30-year career is still the best competitor, best basketball player that I've been fortunate to coach. But if all those three teams were in a tournament together, I would be hard for me not to bet on the 06 team, just because of how hungry and the intensity that they played with. And it didn't take much to motivate them at any time. So, I mean, all my teams, even the teams that didn't win championships, the players hold a real, real special place in my heart. But I'd probably go with the 06 team. I know the 09 team and the 12 team are going to be mad at me, but I'd probably go with the 06 team.
Well, the way that the championships are spread out, there are times where, you know, you have Callan Taylor, who's a freshman on the 09 team, and then in 2012, she's leading Sacred Heart to the NCAA tournament. So it's funny because you have, and I had asked Callan this, I had said, freshman year you versus senior year you, both made the NCAA tournament, which one wins? And even she had a tough time deciding because both versions of herself and both teams were so deep and talented in their own way, like you were saying.
Yeah. Yeah. They were, you know, they were all, they were all unique in their own way, and they were all built, built differently. And they were all a joy to coach. But, yeah, I, you know, funny story with Cal and Taylor. I remember going into the last regular season game of the year, and we were playing Quinnipiac. And I said to Callan, we win the regular season, then you're the player of the year. I was like, if we don't win the regular season, then Felicia Barron from Quinnipiac is the player of the year. And she goes, I know. I said, so if you want to win player of the year, if that's your goal, I was like, then we got to win this game. And I think she had 26, 12 and five assists. So, I mean, just to motivate these kids was just easy. They were a joy to coach, but, you know, all my teams at Sacred Heart all had to have a special place, and they all have a special place in terms of what they built.
Well, in mid-major basketball, even now, you know, there's such, you know, you're playing under a microscope, it seems like, because you can play, you know, that 09 team can go 18-0, but one loss in the conference tournament and they don't see the full reward of what was an amazing season. How does your coaching style, going back to being up front and telling these players what you expect from them, how does it help them come February and March to have them maximize their potential, so when you get to those big games, when the lights are the brightest, you're seeing the results?
Well, Dan, we talk about what our goals are in the beginning of the year and as a team. And if their goals are, you know, to win a championship, then I said, allow me to coach you to win a championship. All right. And I'm going to get under your skin at times. I'm not going to be your BFF because we will live together for 6 months. But that's the last time we talk about that goal. And I got to be honest with you that the 06 team was our first championship game. And I didn't really think we had a chance to win a championship until I woke up that morning and said, holy cow, we really got a chance to win the championship. Because it's all about the process and getting better on it. You get so ingrained in what you're doing on a day-to-day basis and trying to get these players, trying to get your team, trying to get them better. And there's so many ups and downs that there's not enough time to sit there and talk all year long about winning championships. And so we talked about it in the beginning of the year. And then from there on, I was like, let's get better. And that's all I ask of my teams, even here at William & Mary. Let's just get better day by day. And you never know where it's going to take you. Like I said, 06, it took us all the way to the championship game. And then, you know, we had a 3-1 record in championship games. And, you know, and I'm probably most disappointed in that championship that we didn't win that in 2007, 2008, that game that we dropped at Robert Morris. But yeah, we just, you know, we keep it real simple and not, you know, hey, what are our goals? And then let's train and let's practice and let's coach to win those goals, to reach those goals.
So after your final NCAA tournament appearance at Sacred Heart in 2012, the following season, 2012-2013, you finish second in the conference, 22-11, you end up going to the WNIT. And then after that, you make the move to William & Mary. And, you know, this is coming from somebody who grew up around the area and watched those great teams win year in and year out, and the success was always there. Over 400 wins, records within the conference. What was the driving factor to walk away from it?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't like I was actively out there searching for my, you know, a next move or anything like that. It just came down to, you know, I talk to my teams all the time, and I don't know, and I still talk to, you know, my teams and my two sons, that I don't know if you can improve if you don't make yourself uncomfortable, you know, you know, William & Mary, the athletic director at the time, Terry Driscoll, we had two terrific conversations. He's a New England guy, too. He played for Bob Cousy at Boston College. And we had two great conversations in two nights in a row in terms of what he was looking for in a basketball coach and what I was looking for if I decided. Because, you know, I didn't have to move. I was at a real special place coaching some real special players. And but when I came down to visit, there was something about William & Mary that kind of attracted me. It was very similar to Sacred Heart University, you know, and you know, I ultimately was offered the position and I made the move. I think I thought about it for about 12 hours, But I got to tell you, it was one of the hardest things that I had to do, was going in that locker room and telling players and kids that I love that I was making I was going to make myself uncomfortable. You know what I mean? And I don't know if I could have went back there the next year in that locker room and told those kids to make them make themselves uncomfortable and improve. And unless I made myself uncomfortable. And I never went to school outside of Connecticut. I never lived outside of Connecticut. And, you know, so I made myself uncomfortable, and I took the position. I'm still excited about the move that I made. But I'm not going to lie to you. I still watch very closely the women's team, especially. I watch Coach Latina's team. I watch everything that's going on. I actually just had a text message with Senior Vice President Jim Barcanero the other day. So I do try staying in close contact. But it was a real, for anybody who thinks it was a no-brainer, it wasn't a no-brainer, and it was a difficult decision for me.
So you go from Connecticut most of your life, and then you go down south to Virginia. What's the biggest difference from the Northeast to the South?
The weather, the traffic, it's from a basketball standpoint, there's not much. We play in a really good conference. The CAA conference is a real tough basketball conference. William & Mary obviously has got a great academic reputation, and I'm able to recruit kids that that would be special at Sacred Heart. And that's, I never lost track of that. I've always said I need to get players that I got at Sacred Heart University, at William & Mary. And I think, it's been a slow turnaround here, but I've slowly but surely turned the program into, what I had at Sacred Heart. But Connecticut still holds, in Sacred Heart obviously still holds, a real special place in my heart. So I'm actually looking forward to, stopping back. I haven't been back on campus since I left, but I've been back to Connecticut, but it just, things haven't worked out for me to get back on campus.
Have you ever thought about scheduling Sacred Heart?
You know, it was funny. We played Fairfield U a couple years ago. We came up and we played at University of Hartford and at Fairfield. I have it, and I don't know if it's Coach Minetti, I think, has done a great job, and I haven't called her and asked for a game or anything like that. I don't know. I don't know how I'd feel about it. I was going to try, when we were playing at Fairfield, instead of practicing at Fairfield, I was going to try to get on Sacred Heart's court just to get on it one more time, because the Pitt Center really holds a special place for me. And but no, I haven't. It's something maybe in the, I think in the beginning it was just all too new, players that I recruited, and I just didn't, but maybe now it'd be a little bit better. So who knows?
Well, I mean, you've been at William & Mary for many years now, going into your eighth season, and Sacred Heart still has made the NEC tournament every single year since they joined the conference and since they moved into Division I competition, which obviously started under you. Yeah. So what goes through your mind, or how does that make you feel to know that even though you haven't been there for almost a decade, they're still continuing the success that you created when you first started there?
That's good. Great pride. I mean, I turn in every once in a while. I'll turn on to, NEC Front Row, and I'll watch, a half a game or a full game, or, when they're playing Robert Morris or something like that, because that was a big rivalry to us. But, great pride. And like I said, I root for them every year. I want to see them hang up some more banners. I know they made several WNITs, and I tell all the alums that too, the players, that that they need to stay connected, to the basketball program. They need to reach out to the players that are there. They need to reach out to the coaches, because those players really did build one heck of a legacy that that they could be proud of. And like I said, I'm happy to see those these teams continuing to improve and compete for championships.
And my final question to you, like I said, holding records on records on records at Sacred Heart and across Northeast Conference. If you could describe your time at Sacred Heart in one word, what would it be?
Oh, geez. It's tough to put it in one word, but just exciting. My entire career there was just, it was exciting to not only from a basketball program, but from the synergy that I just felt on campus. And I hope it's still there between departments. I can still picture my family sitting on the left, my friends sitting on the right, Dean Wilk and Jim Barcanero sitting right there criticizing every move that I make and who I'm playing. Just teamwork and great synergy and great leadership at the university. I really felt it was like everybody was on board for overall success, not only in the athletic department, but in the but excited. It was just really, really exciting. Like I said, I love talking about Sacred Heart. I love talking about the program there that I was fortunate to coach. And I love talking to the people that are there.
Coach Ed Swanson, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate your ability, your willingness to come on the podcast and talk about it. I know from somebody who was around the area, who had grown up in Fairfield, to watch those teams, the Alyssa Appos, the Callan Taylors, the Maggie Cosgroves, so on and so forth, to watch all of them and be so successful is truly a testament to what you created there. So thank you for that. And once again, thank you for coming on.
Dan, thank you so much.
Yeah, one of the main reasons I love doing this podcast and being able to talk to people is I get to talk to people like Ed Swanson, from growing up around the area and going to Sacred Heart women's basketball games. Those teams, the 06, 09, the 2012 team, those teams were simply putting Sacred Heart on the map and putting them in the category of some of the better mid-major college basketball teams in women's basketball at that time. What he created is something that is still being run to this day. The values, the tradition of success. Jessica Minetti, I know from when I've talked to her time in and time out, when it talks about managing expectations and taking over for somebody like Ed Swanson, she said, and I believe the way she had phrased it to me was at her press conference when she was being introduced as the next head coach, one of the questions that was asked was, can you fill Ed Swanson's shoes? And she said, they're big shoes, but I got big feet. I can manage them. And she certainly has taken Sacred Heart and continued to have that line of success. Like I said, making the NEC tournament every single year. I believe this past season was the fifth or sixth straight season that they made the Northeast Conference semifinals. So the women's basketball program at Sacred Heart certainly is one of the top programs at the university in terms of continued success, postseason success, so on and so forth. So to be able to talk to the man who started it all is, it really was a treat for me. And I once again thank him for being able to come on the podcast and break down his time. And he's, even to this day, nearly a decade later, he still loves talking about what he created at Sacred Heart. And it's obvious from just listening to him that you can tell that he still holds Sacred Heart very close to his heart. I'd love to see a game between William and Mary and Sacred Heart in the future. I know he was unsure if he'd want to do it, but that would be one heck of a storyline to have him return to Sacred Heart, to have his William and Mary team take on Sacred Heart. But I'll leave that one up in the air for speculation, and maybe we can revisit it down the road. But it, like I said, certainly was a treat for me. But that'll wrap up this edition of the podcast, episode number 8 already. I believe we have 3 or 4 more episodes left in the semester. The last episode of the semester will be the 23rd of November, so we're less than a month away from that. Next week, our next show is another great coach at Sacred Heart, a current coach of the men's ice hockey team, coming off of their most successful season in a little over a decade. CJ Maritolo joins me to talk about the season that was last year, the ups and the downs of winning the Connecticut Ice, to having the season taken away because of COVID, how he got to Sacred Heart, how he's been able to build the program, so on and so forth. So that's next week. It was another great interview. CJ's been great to me over the past year or so, talking to him, getting quotes from him, building a relationship. So this was another great interview and opportunity to break down Sacred Heart hockey. As I said, we are 2.5 weeks away from the start of Sacred Heart sports in 2020. The second half of 2020, I should say. They will start November 13th, November 14th. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. We talked a little bit about that and how he's been able to prepare for this, what is going to be an unprecedented season regardless. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much to everybody who has listened. I always appreciate it. I really, really do. Have a great week. We'll see you guys next time.